Our fourth case this morning is Johnson v. Sanders, and I think we have the student attorneys here today, and the first attorney is going to do the opening portion, and then the second one's going to do the rebuttal portion. So whoever goes first, be sure to reserve the 3 to 5 minutes that you want for rebuttal. With that, Carlton Plude, you may proceed. Is that correct? I'm sure I mangled your name. How do you pronounce your last name?
It's Kaiden, Hannah Kaiden.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the court.
Oh, I'm sorry. You had it right. My mistake. You may proceed.
That's okay. My name is Hannah Kaiden, and I am here on behalf of appellant Marilyn Green, formerly known as Lamone Johnson. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal today. In reviewing the district court's entry of summary judgment, this court must find summary judgment was an error if there's any basis in the summary judgment record by which any reasonable juror could find from Ms. Green on the elements of her deliberate indifference claim. And indeed, this court should reverse summary judgment because there are multiple avenues by which a reasonable jury could find defendants knew of Ms. Green's serious medical needs and failed to address them. Two of those avenues stand out most, given Supreme Court precedent and this court's prior holdings. First, when defendants knowingly terminated Ms. Green's prior physician-prescribed estradiol and spironolactone prescriptions to be, quote, consistent with DOC policy and not based on any medical judgment that such prescriptions were no longer medically necessary, they intentionally interfered with her physician-prescribed treatment, which Estelle v. Gamble made clear can squarely constitute deliberate indifference. Second, after defendants cut off Ms. Green from her prescribed medications, she repeatedly made them aware of her serious medical needs, including depression and suicidal ideation that she was experiencing, and defendants largely ignored these symptoms. In concluding that mental health treatment was available to Ms. Green, the district court improperly resolved disputed facts.
First point, reliance on the policy.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't Dr. Sanders also rely on Dr. Jones's report? Seems like he said that in his affidavit. Wasn't it both? Didn't he rely on both the report from Dr. Jones and the policy?
So, Your Honor, Dr. Jones very clearly left open to Dr. Sanders whether the prescriptions should be continued, discontinued, or even advanced. This can be seen in the record, volume 1 at page 129. Dr. Jones left it to Dr. Sanders to make a decision of what would be in Ms. Green's best interest. And then Dr. Sanders, in his affidavit, volume 2, page 43, stated that his only consideration here was to be, quote, consistent with DOC policy. And so a reasonable jury could find either that he was relying on that report or that he relied entirely on the policy in deciding that the prescriptions needed to be discontinued. And to rely entirely on the policy would be an administrative decision and would not be an exercise of his medical judgment.
But what about relying on Dr. Jones? I mean, could Dr. Sanders rely on the staff psychologist's conclusion that Ms. Green did not have gender dysmorphia?
Yes, so there's a distinction here between that diagnosis, which we do not contest, and what makes this case so different from cases that are not deliberate indifference, where there's a disagreement about medical judgment, is that here, Dr. Sanders did not state in any way that he was paying attention to that report. He merely stated that he was focused on DOC policy and thought that under the policy, given that word, undertake treatment, he needed to.
But the policy was dependent on what the diagnosis was. And the diagnosis was a personality disorder. And then you put those two together, and that then affects the hormone treatment protocol.
Yes, Your Honor, the policy does rely on the prescription, but the language in the policy states that it deals with undertaking hormone therapy, where here Ms. Green had been on this prescription for 2 years. And so to do nothing here in Dr. Sanders' shoes.
What makes Sanders' conduct then deliberately indifferent, where, you know, he subjectively knew that he was inflicting cruel and unusual punishment on the inmate?
Yes, Your Honor. It's the combination of the fact that he was merely doing it to rely on policy, which was just an administrative decision, and also the fact that he acknowledged at multiple points in the record that he knew that withdrawal could lead to extreme symptoms such as depression and suicidal ideation. And yet he relied entirely on the policy. He at no point states that he believed these medications were no longer medically necessary for Ms. Green, and the matter of this prior prescription makes her need for medical care here obvious. Dr. Jones, as I've said, left it open to him to decide.
So did Sanders then have a duty, a constitutional duty, to seek a second opinion?
No, not at all, Your Honor.
Professional?
Yeah, thank you for helping me clarify here. He did not have any medical duty to seek a second opinion here, but he had a duty to exercise his medical judgment and decide these prescriptions are no longer necessary. A reasonable jury could find that he was merely asserting an administrative decision here, where that is significant because under this court's prior descriptions, a penological or administrative decision for interfering with prior prescription is what could amount to deliberate indifference.
Would Sanders have been qualified to make a diagnosis of the gender dysphoria versus personality disorder that the report discussed?
He would not have needed to do so to continue the treatment here.
Wasn't there a prison psychiatrist that could have been available to Ms. Porter?
I'm not sure I know what you're referring to in the record. Oh, do you mean after the cutoff of her prescription?
Well, I understood that in addition to Sanders, there were other medical professionals, including a psychiatrist, who might have been qualified to evaluate Ms. Porter if she had asked him to.
Well, so Ms. Green here is not...
Ask the psychiatrist to.
Ms. Green here is not requesting a second diagnosis here, and she's not questioning that diagnosis. What we're focused on here is the cutoff of the prescription.
Okay.
We see those as two separate things here. But that does bring me to another ground
so
for reversal.
I want to make sure I understand your argument. Your argument is that the jury could find that Dr. Sanders didn't rely on Jones's report and instead merely relied on the prison policy?
Even if he was relying on Jones's report, Jones's report does not state that the medication needs to be discontinued. So more the point that I'm making here is that even
if
he relied...
Well, if he
doesn't
have gender dysmorphia, Dr. Sanders could reasonably decide to taper her off, right?
Well, so, Your Honor, the tapering of the prescription emphasizes here that Dr. Sanders was aware of the extreme withdrawal symptoms that Ms. Green could potentially undergo if she was to be taken off these prescriptions that she was on for multiple years. And so a reasonable jury could further find that defendants were deliberately indifferent by failing to provide adequate care to Ms. Green, who was suffering from the depression and suicidal ideation that I've referenced already, following her removal from HRT.
And that now we're kind of bleeding over into your second ground, which is failure to treat at all.
Yes, Your Honor.
Could I, before you hit the second ground?
Sure, yeah.
What is your closest analogous case that would show that Dr. Sanders was deliberately indifferent?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to point this court to Casanova v. Ulibarri, where the Tenth Circuit reversed summary judgment when the defendants intentionally interfered with the plaintiff's CPAP machine. That case looks like Ms. Green's situation because the interference with the CPAP machine came for disciplinary reasons rather than a medical decision that
what
it was no
was
longer
that?
Necessary. Casanova v. Ulibarri. And just as in that case where the prison had a real interest in the disciplinary code that it was upholding when it moved plaintiff and did not allow him to keep his CPAP machine, Sanders here had a real interest in upholding this policy, and yet that was still not enough to grant summary judgment where a medical prescription and need was being denied for a non-medical reason. But if I could move on to the second grounds for reversal. Further, a reasonable jury could find that after the cutoff, defendants were deliberately indifferent by failing to provide adequate care to Ms. Green. As I've mentioned, she was suffering from these extreme symptoms due to her withdrawal from the estradiol and spironolactone. The district court improperly resolved this disputed fact in the defendant's favor, accepting the defendant's account of Ms. Green's treatment options and overlooking that Ms. Green had evidence in the record that she was not treated at all. Most notably...
When you say not treated at all, you mean not treated at all for the side effects of withdrawal, of tapering off?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because she was seeing people, there are a lot of instances where she's seeing healthcare professionals or mental health.
She was being seen in weekly rounds, which this court has cautioned that a finding of merely short and frequent mental health rounds is not necessarily to grant a motion for summary judgment where a reasonable jury can find...
Well, it depends on what they do during the rounds, right?
Yes, Your Honor. In that particular case,
they had, there had been some discovery to determine exactly what was and was not done, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah, in this case, Ms. Green alleges in Volume 2, page 143 of the record, that she did not receive any gender dysphoria treatment while at Davis Correctional Facility. And while she says gender dysphoria there, she was a pro se litigant proceeding at the district court level, and that statement should be construed liberally. She, in many other places in her sick call requests, is lumping together gender dysphoria and this depression and suicidal ideation that I've discussed here.
Do you have a specific example that you think most strongly supports this second argument?
Yes, Your Honor. I would say the Hardeman v. Smith case that
I was
referencing earlier.
No, I'm not asking for a case.
Oh, sorry.
I'm asking for a specific incident where one or the other or both of the individual defendants were deliberately indifferent.
Yes, Your Honor. I would say that where there are multiple places in the record, such as Volume 1, page 352.
I'm just asking for one or two.
Yeah. Where Ms. Green was informing both Nurse Larimer and Dr. Sanders of these extreme symptoms that she was experiencing, and Dr. Sanders never met with her despite these repeated requests. He admits as such on page 177 of Volume 2. And further, as I've stated, he knew that withdrawal could cause depression and suicidal ideation. He enumerated those symptoms explicitly. And if it's all right, Your Honors, I would like to reserve the rest of our time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Good job. Mr. Moore?
Your Honor, Daryl Moore for Dr. Sanders and Nurse Larimer. I guess first I would want to mention that I'm envious of the appellant counsel. I would have loved to have had that opportunity 46 years ago as a third year law student.
It's a great program. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. so some of the questions that you just asked counsel, let me hit those real quick. Judge asked, was there a psychiatrist available? There was a psychiatrist available. She's referred to repeatedly in the record. Dr. Lantrip was on staff there. Now, she didn't make the determination on was there gender dysphoria or not. That was a responsibility for the Oklahoma Department of Corrections psychologist, Dr. Jones. And by affidavit, Veronica Shepherd, the licensed professional counselor that met with Ms. Green, the first day of arrival at the facility, Victoria Shepherd mentions in her affidavit a number of times that Dr. Lantrip, during the year or so that Ms. Green was at the facility, met with Ms. Green, that Sandra Sanford, the mental health care clinician, saw her weekly on rounds. And of course, we talked about, you know, what do those rounds consist of. But then I think it's also important to note that Ms. Green was not unfamiliar with how to make requests to the facility. You may have seen in one of the volumes of materials available, Ms. Green, for instance, asked for additional treatment for a hemorrhoid that she had, brought to the attention of the facility that her laundry bag had gone missing, and then pretty importantly, noted to the facility that there were some other inmates out to get her and asked that protective measures be put in place. So to suggest that Ms. Green didn't know how to ask for things is just inaccurate. The record really kind of blows past that.
Let me ask you, the district court seems to have relied on the existence of the prison policy as a complete defense to a Section 1983 claim. Is it your position that compliance with the policy insulates Dr. Sanders and Nurse Larimer from liability?
Insulates insofar as, and I think the three of you were getting at this just a few minutes ago, insulates insofar as when you consider the question, well, what makes Dr. Sanders' conduct deliberately indifferent? As the district court pretty clearly pointed out, there was no confirmed diagnosis of gender dysphoria. Dr. Jones.
Well, there was previously, right?
Well, not in the record. There was, if we had the entire medical record to display here, there were references to suspected gender dysphoria. That is not a confirmed diagnosis. Suspected gender dysphoria, a very low dose of estrogen, very low dosage of testosterone blocking. But there was never a confirmed diagnosis. There was also in the record, some email traffic between a nurse practitioner at the Dick Connor Correctional Facility, Dr. Jones at the headquarters level, and even Dr. Jones' boss, Dr. Jana Morgan, of, hey, this Lamone Johnson, have you actually seen Lamone Johnson? Have you actually done an evaluation on him? He's telling me that you have, and Dr. Jones and Dr. Morgan both reply back, no. We've never seen. He's on the list to be examined, but we've never seen him. And then about a month later, Dr. Jones does about a six-hour sit-down with him, multiple testing, and then produces this eight-page report.
And again, my question is compliance with the prison policy enough standing alone to grant summary judgment in favor of the defendants?
I think if you, I'll say yes, if you, for instance, as this court in the Smash v. Hardiman or Hardiman v. Smash case from back in 2022, Judge Bacharach writing for the court says, in any event, the denial of hormone therapy, et cetera, was predicated on the diagnosis by Dr. Jones, semicolon. So those additional claims could not survive summary judgment absent evidence that the defendants knew that the diagnosis was incorrect. We therefore affirm summary judgment. And so there's no evidence in the record and clearly nothing presented to the district court that Dr. Sanders or Nurse Larimer had any reason to believe that this eight-page report generated by Dr. Jones after testing and 6 hours with Lamone Johnson was an incorrect report.
On the failure to treat claim, the second claim as I see it, the district court seemed to rely on the waiver of services, mental health services by Ms. Green. I have some trouble with that given a careful reading of the waiver.
Right. And I, it, frankly, in our request of the district court and then to you, did not stomp my foot. I didn't try and make that a foot stomper that, Lamone Johnson signed this waiver. And ergo, we wash our hands of treatment. Victoria Shepherd in her affidavit, Dr. Sanders in his affidavit, both perhaps not as expansively in retrospect as they could have or should have, but set out that, he was seen by Dr. Lantrip during the year plus that he was at the facility. Sandra Sanford made weekly rounds through there. He was seen in the clinics for a variety of other reasons, and that, frankly, mental health services, not per se for gender dysphoria, but depression or anxiety or other things, was available for the asking. I know at times that seems glib, perhaps, to suggest available for the asking, but I guess I would also say you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make her drink. It was available, and available to the athlete.
It was also recommended as a part of a treatment protocol.
Right, correct.
Mental health counseling, both for personality disorder and gender dysphoria, right?
Correct. It was recommended. Perhaps the waiver, as Judge McHugh noted, perhaps the waiver did get in the way a little bit of that, but Lamone Johnson was relatively prolific in asking for things and certainly could have.
Could you address how our decision in the Lamb case
yes.
relates to this argument that the defendants failed to provide gender-affirming care after the tapering?
Well, I guess where I would try and point you is Lamb v. Norwood, there was a diagnosis of gender dysphoria. In this case, we didn't have a diagnosis of gender dysphoria. And so without a diagnosis of gender dysphoria, you wouldn't really get to those four different potentialities that were addressed in Lamb v. Norwood. Back to perhaps Judge Timkovich, as he said, well, there's counseling available, there are mental health services available that aren't specific to gender dysphoria, and that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. But without a confirmed diagnosis of gender dysphoria, why would you provide gender-related services?
Under the policy, can an inmate ask for a second opinion or for reevaluation of a serious medical condition?
There is an opportunity to ask for a second opinion. In the policy that is part of the record, I think it's at the volume 2, page 63, 62 and 63, there's a reference in the policy to an Oklahoma DOC, it's PIARA, initiating review by the PIARA, this committee that and that stands for Personal Identity Administrative Review Authority. And that's not at the facility level. Chief Mental Health Officer, that would be Dr. Jones' boss, the Chief Medical Officer for DOC.
So the policy would permit
yes.
a reevaluation?
Yes, that is correct.
Was there a request here, or was there any?
Did
Dr. Sanders block
no.
a reevaluation?
No.
Did Ms. Green ask for reevaluation?
Apparently not. I didn't find anything. That should have showed up if it was filed by Lamone Johnson, a PIAR request.
Well,
although
that should have shown up in
the
agreement.
On the hormone treatment, I guess that's a disagreement with the Jones evaluation.
Report.
But at some point, doesn't a prison medical official have to credit the inmate's complaints, and maybe Sanders on his own should have initiated it? He's not qualified to, but he could have referred her to back to Jones for that matter.
Yes, if he had questioned, somewhat like the Hardeman v. Smash case, if he had questioned whether the Jones report was correct, accurate, then the policy does allow for the facility to ask up through the chain, the Oklahoma DOC chain, for consideration or provision of a second opinion by the PIARA.
Didn't Ms. Green ask to be reevaluated by Dr. Jones?
She submitted that to Dr. Jones. That's correct.
She kept saying that this is not correct, I do have gender dysmorphia?
To Dr. Jones, correct.
So your position is the request was not made to the right party, that it wasn't made to PIARA?
Well, the question was a request made by Lamone Johnson to the DOC PIARA, and I did not find...
But it's pretty clear that Ms. Green was trying to get reevaluated because she did not agree with Dr. Jones's conclusion that she did not have gender dysmorphia.
Yes, clear that she was asking Dr. Jones to reevaluate her. Now, of course, Dr. Jones, my clients, Dr. Sanders and Nurse Larimer, work for CoreCivic, a incarceration services provider contracting with Oklahoma DOC, and Dr. Jones works with DOC. So it's not as if Dr. Sanders in any way blocked or impeded or got in the way of a request.
Well,
between...
were they gatekeepers?
No, not of that request. That would go to Dr. Jones and Dr. Morgan and the Chief Medical Officer for Oklahoma DOC and this PIARA committee to make a decision on whether or not
to reevaluate. Well, could Dr. Sanders have requested a reevaluation? He's the medical doctor who decides what the prescriptions are. Could he said, I've got some concerns. We're having a lot of side effects. The prisoner is saying this is not correct. Can we reevaluate?
Could he have?
Yes, could he have?
Yes. I believe he could have. The policy was in no way, proscriptive that he couldn't do that.
Okay, Counsel, I think your time has expired.
It has. It goes quick.
Yes, it does.
All right, let's go back to the appellants. And this time, Mr. Flirty. Closer.
May it please the court. Carlton Floyd for Appellant Marilyn Green. This court asked for the clearest example of deliberate indifference to the plaintiff. This is the case about the defendants ignoring Ms. Green's serious symptoms of anxiety, depression, and suicidal ideation. She requested multiple times for reevaluations and for requests to meet with Dr. Sanders or otherwise be treated. However, despite Ms. Green's warning of the likely symptoms of discontinuing her prescriptions, and despite her numerous sick call requests and grievance requests, the defendants failed to provide any adequate care for her serious symptoms. The defendants clearly knew of these symptoms and disregarded them, and a reasonable jury could find that this absence of care constitutes deliberate indifference.
So your theory on this score then is that the gender dysphoria condition was so obvious that any reasonable medical provider would have known that and provided treatment for that. Is it an obviousness?
Yes, Your Honor. And it doesn't matter whether or not Ms. Green necessarily had gender dysphoria and whether it was obvious that she had that specific diagnosis, because she had serious symptoms that required treatment, whether or not it was a personality disorder or a gender dysphoria diagnosis.
As I understood the record, Dr. Sanders initiated a protocol that more slowly discontinued the hormone treatment, in part because of the possibility or likelihood of side effects.
Yes, Your Honor, but I don't think that...
Was that medically proper or...
No, Your Honor. Dr. Sanders did not make a decision based on what was in the best interest of Ms. Green. Maybe it was better to taper it off versus cutting it off completely, but either way, it was disregarding that there would be serious symptoms, and Dr. Sanders should have known that there would be those symptoms and that Ms. Green would require treatment following that discontinuation. You pointed out, Judge Timkovich, that mental health was recommended even in Dr. Jones's report, but the most the defendants can point to is the weekly mental health rounds, which this court, in analyzing a similar factual situation in Hardeman v. Smith, suggested that that should be a question for the jury, that shouldn't be decided on summary judgment. Here, mental health or other treatment was...
I just asked
yes.
You on Hardeman, was the plaintiff in that case ever evaluated for gender dysphoria?
I believe so, Your Honor. An important additional fact in this case is that the plaintiff in that case did not have a prescription that was cut off, whereas here there's a prescription which goes to that the defendant should know that there was a serious medical condition here, that there was a need for treatment. As I was saying, there was not any treatment, any adequate treatment provided here despite the requests. And the problem is failing to provide any care. It's not whether there was a specific treatment that was mandated for the defendants, but that they needed to treat these symptoms due to the numerous requests that Ms. Green was submitting.
So is it your position that that Dr. Jones had conducted a misdiagnosis?
We believe that the evidence that Dr. Jones found in her report based on like evaluations she conducted points to a gender dysphoria diagnosis, and that her conclusion that Ms. Green did not have gender dysphoria is not aligned with that.
And in fact, there was a diagnosis of a personality disorder. Would you consider that also a serious medical condition?
Just yes, like sir.
So either one would satisfy the objective?
Yes, Your Honor. And importantly here, there wasn't a plan to treat the personality disorder that was implemented instead. It was just cutting off the prescription as a result of there was the result. They saw that it wasn't in compliance with the policy, and so they cut off the prescription.
Was mental health counseling made available to Ms. Green, and she refused to participate, or was it not available?
2 points on that briefly, Your Honor. One is that it wasn't available because Ms. Green made numerous requests and those were not fulfilled. The defendants point to some waiver, but that waiver happened before Ms. Green knew that she had, that her prescription would be cut off. And she specifically said, that no, I don't need antidepressants right now because my prescription I'm getting covers that.
What about mental health counseling? Did she ask for that and it was refused?
She did make numerous requests for treatment.
And it was refused by the prison?
There are numerous times where she requested treatment and it was not provided.
It's not provided.
Well, when you say treatment, she requested hormone treatment. Right?
She also requested, for instance, to meet with Dr. Sanders again.
But when she requested mental health counseling, don't the records indicate that the mental health counselor met with her the same day?
I believe, Your Honor, that there may be times where she was met on a one-off basis, but there was not. We were saying there was not adequate treatment provided in that
because of the discontinuation of the hormone treatment.
Because of the seriousness of her symptoms, that the treatment did not the treatment provided of maybe a one-off appointment and no further follow-up treatments or the weekly mental health rounds, that's a question for a jury, whether that was adequate for the seriousness.
How do you then link that up to Dr. Sanders?
Well,
if part of the diagnosis was mental health treatment and it was available, Sanders wasn't qualified to do psychiatric treatment, you know, how do you link up deliberate indifference to his conduct?
We're saying, Your Honor, that Dr. Sanders knew there would be these serious effects, and he did like look to the waiver and say that he wasn't going to provide mental health treatment because of the waiver that happened earlier. And there were numerous requests over the next years that showed that Ms. Green continued to have symptoms that required treatment that were not cared for.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Congratulations, you're done. Counsel are excused and the case submitted. And I do want to thank the university for making this opportunity available to the students. You did a very nice job, and I hope you enjoyed working on the project and arguing before the 10th Circuit. So look for a case in the 8th Circuit next time. That's closer than I am.